Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leadingideas. Leading Ideas Talks is also brought to you by Digital Ministry Consultation Services from the Lewis Center. Our Dr. Tim Snyder will thoroughly review your church's current digital worship and provide extensive feedback. Then he will lead your worship leaders in discovering the next steps for your digital worship design. Learn more at churchleadership.com/digitalworship. How can your church extend its reach and maximize its impact through digital media? In this episode, media producer Phil Cook shares strategies for becoming more media savvy.
Welcome to Leading Ideas Talks, a podcast featuring thought leaders and innovative practitioners. I am Douglas Poe, the director of the Lewis Center, and your host for this talk. Joining me is Dr. Phil Cook, media producer, writer, speaker, coach, the author of many books. His latest book is Maximize Your Influence, How to Make Digital Media Work for Your Church, Your Ministry, and You. Our focus for this podcast is influence. Phil, I'm so glad that you're joining us, and I really enjoyed your book and believe that is something that all pastors and church leaders need to read. So thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Doug. I'm thrilled to be here. I love what you guys are doing, and this is going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Let me begin with what I believe is the reason you wrote the book. Why do many churches and church leaders struggle to maximize their influence?
That's a great question. And a lot of it's financial. A lot of churches are small. I think the average church in America is about 75 people these days. But I really wrote the book. It came out of the COVID-19 shutdown, you know, when churches were forced. You know, it's funny. We've been working with many clients and churches for years on helping maximize their live stream. But I've had pastors that would tell me, you know, Phil, I don't mind live streaming my service, but that's not real ministry. Well, I'll tell you, when the church shutdown happened in 2019, that changed their tune quickly. And people were really caught, pastors and leaders were caught really blindsided by this whole thing. How do we get our message out in this shutdown world? So we started getting flooded with calls from pastors and leaders wondering, how do we make this work? How do we connect with our people? And so it was during that shutdown I wrote the book, because I realized that seminary is great for teaching the Bible and preaching techniques and doctrine and theology, but seminary is not so great in most cases on teaching media and communications, how to get your message out there. And so I really wrote Maximize Your Influence to be a reference book for pastors and leaders to have on their desk that deals with everything from websites to social media to short videos to publishing in a digital world, even speaking and preaching in a digital to a digital generation. All those things are so important. So that really was the birth of the book and why I felt it so important to get it out there.
I agree with you. And I want readers to make sure that they do pick up the book to read it, because we will not be able to cover everything you cover in the book. But you have some wonderful advice. But I want to sort of jump into it. You talk about identity and identity development. And I don't want you to give away your secret sauce or anything, but can you share what you mean by identity development and how congregations can do it better?
Well, you know, I've worked with nonprofits, ministries, churches for so long. And one of the things I noticed is the organizations that are pretty good at a lot of things never get noticed. They don't get on the radar. They don't break through. They don't get on people's minds. But the ones that really do break through and get noticed are the ones that are extraordinary, generally at one big thing, one thing that they do extraordinarily well. And it's so funny, in churches in particular, we have the Great Commission, where we feel called, you know, the Bible tells us to go out and preach the gospel to all nations and to all people. And we feel like we can all reach everybody. But the truth is, we can't. We can't. I try to make churches understand that. Who are the people that, because of your personality as a pastor or leader, the demographic makeup of your church, the geographic location, who are the low-hanging fruit, the people that we could connect with very easily? Let's focus on that crowd. And it's funny, because I've discovered that if we could all do that, if everybody would reach those people that could identify with them and their message and really connect on a deep level, we would actually reach the world. But so many of us are trying to dilute this whole thing by trying to reach everybody, and it's just not going to happen. The fact is, your church, whether it's in Los Angeles or Tulsa or Des Moines or Atlanta, is just not going to reach everybody. So let's really focus on the people that we want to reach. And a lot of that comes from the leader, the calling, the gifts, the talent of the leader. That's a good starting point to figure out how we figure out what our identity is, what our brand story is. You've heard that term, I'm sure. That's really the starting point of the process.
I'm curious, and I think what you're saying is interesting, and I could see why congregations would sort of want to push back. So do you think that congregations, and particularly pastors, they're sort of taught, you know, your goal is to take the gospel and to preach it to all the earth. So this idea of actually thinking, I have to limit possibly my audience, it doesn't mean we don't welcome everyone, but I'm actually targeting someone is just hard for them to accept.
It really is. It sounds weird, but let's face it. If your goal is trying to reach the world, you're probably doing a pretty terrible job of it. I don't know of any church that's actually, you could say, is reaching the world with the gospel. Maybe a handful at the most. The truth is, we're called in our community, in our location, with a specific purpose, I believe. I think the Bible talks over and over about our calling, and I think our calling is to a specific group, specific people in a specific town or community. And I just think that if we could become extraordinary at reaching that group, one of the examples I love to give when I have a branding conversation with clients is, you know, when it comes to that narrow niche, if you will, the woman that's won the most Grammy Awards of all time. If you look at the history of the Grammy Awards, you know, the big music awards here in Hollywood, the woman that's won the most is not Aretha Franklin or Barbara Streisand or Beyonce or Celine Dion. The woman that's won the most by far, actually, is Alison Krauss, the bluegrass player. And that means that I don't care what happens at the rest of the Grammy Awards, when they announce the Bluegrass Awards, she so dominates that category, she walks away with all those awards year after year after year. Guess what? That's put her on the map. Now, she's done a rock album with Robert Plant. I hear she wants to do a classical album. She can do anything she wants now because she so dominates that niche. And I say in ministry, we could do something very similar. Instead of trying to be all things to all people, certainly, like you say, we welcome everyone. No question about that. But who are the people that we could be amazing at reaching and connecting with? Because I think that's really the way to get your church noticed. People become aware of who you are in the community. And that's where you're going to create the biggest harvest.
I really love that analogy. I did not know that. So that's an interesting fact. That's great. In chapter 2, you pose a great question, and I'm going to have you answer your own question.
Okay.
You ask in a book, how do we get the message of the church heard through the massive and growing wave of media static? So I think this is a struggle for many congregations. So how do they get their message heard?
Well, in a social media world, in a digital media world, distraction is everything. It's unbelievable. I read a statistic just recently that it's changed our behavior. I mean, the fact is, we're being pulled in so many directions. We have so many things to do. We got this iPhone in our pocket. You know, it's always going off. We have texts to answer, emails to answer, that we've changed our behavior so that when we meet someone for the first time, we decide what we think of that person in the first 4 to 8 seconds. Now, think about that, Doug. We haven't had a chance to talk with them, to learn much about them, hear what they have to say. But hey, we got other things to do. So we just started making judgments about things that we don't even know anything about. In fact, I tell pastors very often that I'm glad your sermon is anointed. I'm glad your worship is fantastic. But in an 8-second world, what's your parking experience like at your church? What's the lobby like? Who's the first person a new visitor meets when they walk in the door? Because in today's distracted culture, people are making those decisions long before they ever get to their seat. So I just think we need to understand, first of all, that first impression counts. We've always, you know, been told your first impression is the most important thing. Let me tell you, in a digital universe, it's the most important thing you could possibly do. And it's very hard to repair a bad first impression because people have just so many other things to do and they have other choices. So I just think the first thing to understand in getting on the radar is make sure you can cut through that clutter and get noticed. One great example I mentioned, Doug, is during the shutdown. I would start looking at different churches' live streams, and I would go from church to church and I would watch them and just kind of see how churches were doing. And one of the things I noticed was how difficult it was to find their live stream. You could go to their church website and had to go through page after page after page, click, 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 click to find the live stream. Let me tell you, nobody's going to put up with that anymore. Make the live stream easy to find. Put it on the homepage. Make it a big, big, easy button. The fact is, we really need to grease the skids for anything we want people to do in this generation, because there's so many other options, so many other distractions, and it's a huge, huge problem. In fact, I don't want to rant, but one researcher in the UK says we see the average person in the Western world sees about 10,000 media messages every single day. So in that world, it's not necessarily the best message that gets through. It's the message that knows how to cut through the clutter, get to the point, and make an impact. That's the message that's going to get through. And the truth is, many people in the secular world today have figured that out. And I think that's one of the reasons the church is just being marginalized in the culture and we're losing so much influence.
Do you think consistency is important also? And the reason I ask, you made me start thinking. My son is an upcoming senior this year in high school. We unfortunately use my email for all the colleges for recruiting. And I have to tell you, I mean, some of them, they send a message every single day.
Yeah.
Saying something about why he should be checking out their particular school. So there's sort of a consistency that, you know, even if you weren't thinking about them, they just keep sending it, keep sending it, keep sending it to where you almost have to take notice. So does consistency help?
It does. It's interesting that marketing guru Seth Godin says that repetition builds trust. We live in such a distracted world that we don't, you know, we think the message we're putting out, this is a good word for churches that are doing their advertising and promotions and things like that. We think we get sick of it after hearing it a few times. But the truth is, about the time we get tired of hearing that message we're advertising or promoting, the people out there are just starting to have it sink in. So There is a question that when in a world where we're being so overwhelmed with media messages, repetition matters, consistency matters. Those things really do help you get on the radar.
You talk about sort of when churches get in difficult financial situations, the first cut is often in the communications area. And I want you to talk about why this is a mistake. I mean, hopefully people sort of figured it out based on what you've already said in the podcast, but just to make it plain, why is it a mistake to cut the communication first?
Well, I'll tell you, during the COVID-19 shutdown, we discovered that an enormous number of churches are still in business today because of their communication and media teams. You may only have a graphic designer or a video person or someone like that, but let me tell you, during that shutdown, if it wasn't for your communication team, you probably would have gone out of business. So I think pastors, if there was anything good that came out of COVID, I think it was probably that pastors just realized how important communication and media is. And like you say, many times when finances get tough, the first person we cut are media or communications. But the truth is, it's interesting that pastors often focus on what they can see. Who are the people in the room? Who are the people in the sanctuary when they're preaching on Sunday morning? That's their audience in their mind. But a capable communication or media director sees an audience far, far beyond that, way outside the walls of the church. And if you really want to get your message out there, if you want the gospel to connect with hundreds, thousands, potentially millions of people, communication and media is really the key. And so I even go so far as to say churches often will put an attorney on retainer if they have legal issues, or an accountant. They'll have a regular relationship with an accountant for CPA kind of issues, financial stuff. I'll tell you, we're entering a time today when it might be wise to have a retainer or a monthly relationship with a outside communication firm, because it's so important how we message the gospel in this media-driven culture today.
I really like that idea. I hadn't thought about that before, but it makes sense to really be in contact with someone who can help you think through your particular congregation's message to make sure that it's clear.
Yeah. And Doug, one thing, let me jump in. Sorry to interrupt, one of the things I get called on a lot is crisis communication. You know, when a pastor has a moral failure, runs off with somebody, or somebody steals money from the church, or a youth director is picked up for drunk driving or something, you know, abusive. I often get the call to help churches navigate that world. You know, do we release a statement? Do we talk to the press? How do we tell the congregation? Those kind of questions. And so more than ever, a communication professional really will help in those deals. I often say that it's not when a communication crisis will happen. It's not if a crisis will happen, it's when. In today's world, you just never know what's going to happen out there. So very often, and keep in mind that an attorney is great, but their job is to help you legally. They're not there to help your reputation necessarily. So I've seen cases where legally a church won the court battle, but they lost in the community as far as their reputation. It was just completely trashed during the process. So a communication professional is going to help keep the reputation of the church, the pastor, help whatever we're trying to save here, keep that up. So it's a little different between a legal advisor and a communication advisor. Both are important, but they bring different things to the table. So all in all, you're right. I think communication is, hopefully pastors are understanding how important communication expertise is in this digital culture.
I was going to ask this question later, but since you've started talking about crisis, I love this quote from Sir Jonathan Miller. You learn to ice skate during the summer.
Yeah.
And the point being, of course, that you don't wait until the crisis happens to learn what to do. You actually prepare for how you're going to handle it before it happens. And you just sort of spoke a little bit about that, but I don't know if you want to add to why it's so important to really be ready to handle when something comes up before the time it actually takes place.
Well, in the digital world we live in, I'll give you a great example. I got a call from a church a few years ago on the East Coast, and they are a very, very large church, and they had a pastor who had had an affair. And literally the pastor confessed to the elders, and the elder board was the only people that knew. And the first call they made before the elder board even dismissed that meeting was to me. So they called me on the phone. They said, let me tell you what just happened. So they told me the whole story of how it happened and what happened. The pastor just confessed and just literally walked out the door. So I thought, okay, let me check Google and see if anything is leaked out about this situation anywhere in the country. If somebody might know about it, something locally might have leaked out. So I Googled the church name and the situation in there. And lo and behold, a website on the West Coast, all the way across the country, had the entire story on their front page. Wow. So we're talking a matter of minutes, the story was out there. So if you think of your crisis communication plan after it happens, you're going to be late. You're going to be late because everybody else in the world is going to know about it. And the truth is, you'll love this, Doug, in the digital world, you can't hide. You just can't hide. I had a pastor one time, you won't believe this, but I had a pastor one time say, Phil, it'd probably be best if you didn't tell my congregation about my yacht. Well, I said, you know what? You're kind of an idiot, because if they've got Google, they can download all the ownership papers for the yacht online. And if they've got Google Earth, they can download a satellite photo of the boat sitting at the dock. So we just can't hide anymore. And we have to understand that having a plan ready to go just in case something happens is probably the smartest thing you could possibly do, because if you don't, you're just going to be too late and it's going to be catch up, which doesn't help anyone.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to shift gears and we won't talk about crisis, but the other thing that I really appreciated is you're not talking about church being gimmicky. You talk about how, you know, churches will sometimes try to copy the secular world and start using gimmicks to be noticed. And you're like, well, no, that's not a good idea. And it's not actually going to work for you long term.
Yeah, that's so true. I grew up in the 60s and my dad was a pastor, and we had a lot of pastors at the time that would do strange things. You know, if we bring enough kids to Sunday school, the pastor will shave his head. Or one pastor I remember in our town sat on a pole for a week trying to get people to come. If he could get attendance numbers up, he'd come down off the pole. Just stuff like that. And I remember in school, in junior high and high school, kids would ask me, Phil, why does Pastor so-and-so do such stupid things to get attention? And I thought, the way the world perceives us really matters. The way they look at us is going to decide whether they decide to open the door to us, whether they're going to visit or not. And I realized early on, gimmicks don't help. I've seen so many pastors do gimmicks about their new sermon series on marriage and sex. And one church put a bed on the roof of the church, and pastor went up there and he got sunburned. It just didn't work out well at all. There was just people that try those things. And I've learned over the years, do you really want to be remembered as the pastor that preached in his boxer shorts or the pastor that really preached the word of God with integrity and purpose? Ultimately, a gimmick can backfire in most cases. And very often it leaves a taste in someone's mouth, in the audience, the congregation, the community's mouth, that you probably don't want. You don't want to be remembered as that person. You want to be remembered for something a little higher. So I'm just saying, you know, there are times when gimmicks are fun. I get it. They're okay. But most of the time we don't really think them through. And I can give you so many examples from both secular businesses and churches that just didn't think it through, and it ended up backfiring and making for a real negative situation. So I'm just really cautious when it comes to gimmicks, because they usually don't help.
Yeah, it makes good sense. And again, Dr. Phil Cook is with me, and we're talking about his new book, Maximize Your Influence. One of the things that I admit I am horrible at doing, and I'm going to try to take to heart your advice, but I will say congregations in general don't do well, is respond back to our social media followers.
Yes.
You know, why is this important? Why don't more of us do it?
Well, very often we forget that social media, above all, is social. And so sometimes pastors in particular will post things online and never go back and say anything to the people that respond to them. And so I was with a pastor one time who just never did that. He would post stuff, but never even look at what people was, how they'd respond. So I said, "Hey, why don't you go back?" And as one lady had responded to him, and I said, "Why don't you say something to her and give her a comment or something?" And he did. Next thing this lady said was, "Oh my gosh, my pastor talks to me on social media. This is the most amazing church I've ever been to." She was thrilled. And I've had other pastors that tell me the minute they start reaching out, I mean, what the point is, we don't have all day to do social media posts. I get that. But social media is really a conversation. It's not just about posting a scripture like, "Today is the day the Lord hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." That's okay, but that's not going to really spark any gospel conversations. I always say, let people see an insider view of your life. You know, most churches, the pastor, you can't just call the pastor up and say, "Hey, meet me at Starbucks in a half an hour. I'd love to talk to you about stuff." Not everybody can do that. But through social media, we can give people a glimpse of what your life is like. So I tell pastors all the time, instead of just putting trite, you know, phrases and motivational sayings online, share a little bit about what you're thinking when you're backstage getting ready to walk out to do the funeral of somebody you've loved at your church for years and years. What thoughts are going through your mind? What's God saying to you at that moment? What about preparing a message when you're struggling late at night and it's just not coming together? I'd love to hear about that. I'll tell you, if pastors and leaders could share those intimate moments with people who follow them, I'll tell you, you get more followers than you know what to do with, because that's what people love. It's a conversation. It's social. And engaging with people back and forth is really what makes it work. So I usually will say, if you're going to post something, give it a few minutes. Post and then wait and see what other people are saying and carve out some time to respond to some of those people. And again, you don't have to do it all day long, but it does really charge up that relationship and really gives people a spark. And they love to have those kind of conversations with leaders.
I think that's helpful, and hopefully many of us will take it to heart. I also found extremely helpful, and I think this is particularly important for congregations, is creating video content.
Yes.
But I think the key here, and you point this out, is to keep it short, between 2 and 4 minutes. So yeah. This posting your sermon is not going to get the buzz that you're hoping. So what should pastors or congregations post? That would be helpful.
That's a really interesting question, because there are some categories. You know, you're right. Most people want to see what we call short videos, 2 to 4, maybe 6 minutes max. And the truth is, short videos have become the number one marketing tool in America. They're so popular that businesses, nonprofits, churches, ministries, all kinds of organizations are using them. So there's actually more internet bandwidth being taken up these days by short videos than anything but Amazon, except Amazon Prime and Netflix. In fact, for the first time, this is kind of interesting for ministry leaders, since day one of the internet, the most watched thing online has always been pornography. But as of about a year ago, short videos surpass pornography as being the most viewed thing online. So here's the thing. If you're a church or ministry or leader or pastor, whatever you do, share your story with short videos. And trust me, we all have a little camera in our pocket. It's called a phone. And today the quality is so great. In fact, there are 2 film festivals in America now for feature films produced on iPhones. So the truth is, you could take your phone out anytime behind the scenes, give us a little short video, give us your comment on something that's happening out there, what's going on in your life, People love that. Now, sermons can still go online. I encourage churches to create a YouTube channel, for instance, and put the pastor's messages. I would say you don't need to put the whole service on there. You know, people that go back are generally going back because they want to hear the message. They're not necessarily interested in the praise and worship or the announcements or, you know, taking up the offering or anything like that. I would say if you can edit your message down to just the message, build your church YouTube channel on that, you'll be amazed at the number of people that'll start viewing those. But, and people will watch longer in those kind of settings because we've gotten used to watching. I travel, you know, on planes all the time, and I see people watching movies on iPads and phones and everything. So we're used to watching longer content, but there's something really engaging about a short video that tells a short story in a very powerful way. And I encourage churches and leaders to think about how you could tell your story with short videos, because it makes a huge, huge difference in engaging with people.
One of my favorite stories in the book actually involved your wife. You talked about visiting a church and the hospitality of an usher. I want to have you share that story and sort of the great insight that you provide related to that that I think is really helpful.
Well, you know, I'm one of the first people to say that I like ushers helping direct people where to sit, because I work with a lot of churches that have television ministries, and we certainly don't want to see empty seats out there. We like to see the place full. And so we kind of will sometimes fill it up based on where the cameras are looking. But my wife will have none of that. She doesn't want to be told where to sit. She wants to find her seat herself. And many times she's gotten a little short with ushers who are just determined to tell her where she's supposed to sit. And one church in particular, we showed up, I forget why, we showed up a few minutes late, and this pastor just had a policy that at 11 o'clock when the service started, the doors are shut and you don't get in, and you had to go to the overflow room. And so we got there about 5 minutes late, and we could look through the glass door and see that the church was only 2/3 full. There was a ton of empty seats in the back. We could have slipped in quietly, no problem. And the usher just would not allow it. He wouldn't even wait for maybe a song or a prayer time or a break in the service where we could go in, slip in unnoticed. He just wouldn't let us in. So we had to go sit with the nursing moms and everybody else in the overflow room. And oh, my wife was just livid. So the irony of the whole thing is years later, that pastor called me and asked me if I'd come and help their church with some media issues they were facing. So he hired our company to help work with that church. And when my wife found out, she said, that's him. That's the church. And so I told him that story. And of course he was so embarrassed and he sent her flowers, and it was just really funny, but it really showed you that you need to take the time with your volunteers, with your ushers, to make them sensitive to people. I mean, there's just times when rules are important, and there's times when rules, we can have a little grace when it comes to rules. And we want to get more people in that congregation and more people in that sanctuary, but some volunteers just go by the rules. So I always advocate, I'm a big believer in volunteers, by the way. I just think that you can create an army of volunteers who give of their time and do it enthusiastically and want to make a difference, but they have to be trained. We have to take some time with them. So yeah, for all, it's just funny. I work in the communication business, so I'm probably more sensitive to that than most people, but it can be a real issue in a lot of churches around the country.
Phil, as we get ready to draw to a close, I'm wondering if for those who are going to pick up your book after listening to this, can you share why this book is important now as we come out of the pandemic? Why is it still an important read for them?
Well, first of all, living in the digital age is a much bigger thing than we thought. I think that it's impacted more of our life. It's impacted everything that we do in some way. And so for you to be a leader, a pastor, a nonprofit leader, whatever you do, you need to understand how that's going to affect your work and what you do. And I wrote the book as a really a reference book. The truth is, this is not, even though we're back in buildings and we're going back to, you know, life is normal, this is not the time to let up off the gas pedal when it comes to your live stream, with connecting with people with short videos and social media. It's more important now than ever. I actually believe that a significant number of church members got used to that whole live stream thing. And I think some of them are going to probably stay at home one or two Sundays a month and engage with a live stream rather than show up back at the church all 4 weekends. So I think we need to understand how to keep them engaged and how to make this thing grow. And I really wrote the book as a reference. So it deals with how do you what about book publishing in a digital world? What about preaching to a digital audience? You know, an audience that's so socially media driven. Do we need to change the way we preach to that crowd? It's not about compromising your theology or your doctrine. It's just about how to be effective in reaching those. We forget sometimes that the Apostle Paul used the technology of his day, which was letters, to build the foundation of the early church. And then around the 1500s, Martin Luther came along and discovered the printing press. And he literally turned that into the publishing industry as we know it today. He was the most popular author of his time in the entire world. So I think today, not to recognize the power of digital media and use that to get the gospel out there in so many ways, I think is critical. So the book was really written to be a reference. It should be on your desk all the time. And when issues come up, you can refer to it and check different things. It can be a big, big help, I think, for pastors and leaders who are trying to get their message out to today's really secular culture, where it's really getting more difficult than ever to break through. I think this is so important.
Thank you, Phil. I really appreciate it. And again, really enjoyed the book.
Thank you, Doug.
On the next Leading Ideas Talks, Dwight J. Friesen shares insights from his new book, co-authored with Tim Sein, 2020's Foresight, Three Vital Practices for Thriving in a Decade of Accelerating Change.
We're really good at telling the parts of the story that look to the past and invite us to the present. We have not fostered the skill set as much to think about the future part of the story. Every story has a past, present, future component to it. And part of what loving our neighbors looks like, we try to explore in the book, part of what it looks like to love our neighbors well is to actually help them anticipate the changes and challenges that are going to come their way so they're not blindsided when something that they could have actually planned for hits them.
Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.